cliffcentral.com.
This is going to sound like something really terrible to say, but the fact of the matter is, this guy, when he passed on, that was the first and only time where I was like, I can't believe that this musician died. Like, this is the only musician that affected me when he died. Michael is like, I don't know how else to describe Michael Jackson. You can't get any better. You cannot. Like, you know how people like saying, like, once in a lifetime? This guy was once in a lifetime. You know what I mean? Like, people used to go to Michael Jackson's concerts and just faint. You know, like,
literally,
like, just faint. I saw there's this performance of his. I think it was in Brazil or something. And they televised it on HBO and it broke records and whatever. And the craziest thing happened while I'm watching this thing. There's a guy who was in the crowd in a wheelchair and he passed out in the wheelchair. Like, I shit you not. Only Michael Jackson does things like that. I'm sorry. You can't compare this guy to anyone else. I
You're
refuse.
Making it sound like you missed out.
I missed out on...
You were alive in his prime.
I actually think he would have been one of those people who fainted.
No. I'm sorry. Do you know how much a Michael Jackson ticket costs?
You would have been starstruck if you were...
Not faint. What's the point of going to a concert and then fainting? That doesn't make sense. Like, so can you imagine, like, if you're one of those people that fainted at the concert, mm-hmm. and they ask you, so, hey, man, you went to go check out Michael Jackson. How was it? Man, I didn't see shit.
I fainted, bro.
I passed out. I was there. I remember getting there, and then I woke up in the hospital. I'm like, man, were you at a concert or a UFC fight? Like, what the hell just happened?
And you weren't even drunk. Like, you just passed out of seeing someone else.
Can you imagine?
If there's one guy I would pay for to come or for you to get a hand job from, it'd be Michael Jackson.
You would pay Michael to... Seriously?
I would pay for you to get a hand job.
To give him a hand job.
No, why would Michael Jackson give me a hand job?
Just like, to complete the whole set. Why not?
Didn't he have enough trouble with kids? Stop it.
Very much.
No, that's disgusting.
Just say you consent. Say I consent.
No, stop it.
You don't consent?
No, I don't. Okay. The crazy Looney Tunes are in the building. I go by the name Just Another Cool Kid, or Jack for short. I'm joined by Neo Van Given and Londi. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. Well, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
2016 is a messy bitch, bro.
What happened? You guys always have interesting stories. No. What happened?
No. There's no story this time, but I feel as though we're all aware now that 2016 is a messy, messy hole. That's just what it is.
Why is that? Why is that? I don't understand why you would open up the show like that. Why would you say that?
I'm quite interested as to what is he going to say about that, because I'm a bit...
The thing is, my thing is like...
And now he's looking for a hole.
Yeah, well, for the earphones. You know, you guys are nasty. We don't have to sexualize
everything. You are.
No, you guys are sexualizing everything. Well, why is 2016 such a messy whatever?
I just think you just have to look at the state of the country and the state of the world and the state of people's personal lives as well.
Yeah.
It's affected us in different ways. And mostly what we have in common in terms of 2016 being a messy hole is death. Like, there's been so much death.
Yeah. Do you know what? Strangely enough, on my side... Oh, shit. Actually, I made a mistake. I actually thought that this was the 1 year I haven't been to a funeral, but I've been to a couple this year, which is, it's never fun. Like, that's the one thing, no matter how zen you might be, that you just can't get used to. Like, that is it's the final frontier. There's no coming back from that. Like,
yeah.
Once you're gone, you're gone.
It's the creepiest and weird feeling ever.
Yeah, hey, man. And, you know... From the looks of things, especially in this country, things are insane right now. I mean, I saw pictures on Twitter of the main gate at in Cape Town.
Yeah.
I believe it's the university in Cape Town over there. They burnt down and stuff, and some people got injured and all of this stuff. And then Skumba got into trouble for speaking about stretch marks and saggy breasts and all of this stuff.
He apologized.
I honestly feel like he had nothing to apologize for. Keep in mind, the same people that are complaining about what Skumba said about saggy breasts and stretch marks are the same people that post memes of Bonang with Bricks and Bara o tlamo shapa ka stena and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, you're telling me stretch marks is where we draw the line, excuse the pun, but that's where we draw the line.
And he can joke about disabled people
and all of this other stuff, but stretch marks, no. Don't go to stretch marks. Talk about whatever you want, just not say tits and stretch marks. Seriously?
Yeah, well.
That was dumb. And then in the midst of all of these things, we are seeing somewhat delaying tactics by the presidency in its efforts to, you know, spoil Tuliman Tonsela's last couple of days or weeks as the public protector.
This country goes through things that, like, in one day or in one week that most countries would go through in months.
I just feel like at this point in time, there's this overwhelming feeling that I get that people just don't want to be doing their jobs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Tulima Donzela would have been a problem for the president if the president was just doing his job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's either he's, for lack of a better word, his cronies are too blind to see that he's actually hiding something, or he's very much squeaky clean and they don't want his image to be tainted.
Okay, let's get this out of the way. This is a fact. There is no such thing as a clean politician. Forget that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking for someone who's going to tell you the truth all the time as a politician and got there through the merit of his work and blah, blah, man, forget that.
Sit down.
In fact, the higher you are, the bigger your skeletons, I believe.
You might as well say, I'm going to go eat some clean ass.
Exactly. Wow. There's no such. Just doesn't make sense at all.
I think, look, man, my summary on that, on what everything that's going on, is that everybody does it. Everybody's got skeletons, like you said.
Yeah.
But everybody bribes, everybody accepts bribes, and everybody has found a way to manipulate whatever system they're in to make it more fruitful for them.
But how do we change that culture, man? I mean, you're talking about people that have salaries, that are going home.
Not just salaries, fat salaries.
You know, that have got tons of money, and yet they still have the time to be taking bribes. Like, I don't know. Like, shouldn't that culture change?
It boils down to morality, though. It's dead. But how do we bring it back?
The thing is, everyone seems to think that morality is based in religion. So that's when, you know, we start discussing Jesus and Muhammad. And, you know, I just honestly believe that everyone knows the difference between right and wrong.
Exactly.
Like, I don't think you...
It's common sense.
Yeah. And yet, people are still doing as they please. It's... How do we solve it? Like, does anyone actually have a solution to this stuff?
Do you think there is a solution to this?
Yeah. I just think government officials should not be paid. They shouldn't be paid at all. Like, okay, what does the president use his money for? Like, let's be honest. The president gets north of 2 million rand.
American Swiss.
What exactly is the president using his money for? Like, his actual income. What does he use that money for? Like...
Huh.
I mean, is he going to wake up and say, my kids can't go to school, I don't have money for school fees?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're the president? Your kids can't go to... What?
Because you don't have money?
That's... Okay, we can cancel that. He doesn't have to buy a car. Do you think he pays rent? He's got a bigger house than 95% of the people in this country. So...
What do they need money for?
What do they actually need money for? Like, seriously.
He's spending his money on cool time. It ain't cheap, right? It's not free also.
Come on.
He's on these streets buying snacks.
Come
at the expense of the poor. At the expense of the have-nots.
Hey. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. Like, that, to me, that is one of the most... Like, I could never figure it out. Even when I was a kid, man. Like, when Thabo Mbeki was president, my dad was like, yeah, this guy gets paid so such and such. But I was like, but what does he pay for? Like, what money does he use? Like... Jacob Zuma is not going to wake up with no clothes one day.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. We need to get a smarter individual in here and explain that to us. Most probably he will give us a better answer.
And props to the public protector. We need more principled people like her in our public service. Like, hope the next one is going to live up to the mark that she has left.
I doubt it. Like, do you understand how much of a rock star Tulima Donsela is?
She is life.
What?
She is life and everything good
what?
In it.
She made Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. Okay,
do you know how
big the world is? and she made the 100 list. So that woman is a rock star.
She is
a rock star, man. Like, I think what we need as the world in general is a lot more women like that. Like, we need more women in positions of power, I feel.
Yeah.
Okay, because you can look as far back in history as you want.
Strong women.
Men always mess things up. We just screw things up, like, in a colossal manner. Like, it's shocking.
Well, like I said, we just hope the next one will be as good or even better than she has been.
We'll see. All in good time.
Yeah.
Right. So, we're here trying to, you know, lend our part in changing the world. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, as we all know, global warming is something that we actually should be taking seriously. The effects of global warming are clear as day. I mean, we can see all of the catastrophes and the weather changing in the globe. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's about time each and every one of us, you know, helps out. Does our little part in our own small way to make sure that, you know, our grandkids and our great-grandkids and all of them still have a planet to live on, that they can, you know, walk around and breathe without gas masks and stuff. Because it looks as if
it's going that way.
That might just be it. Yeah. We thought we'd have to leave the planet to come across some aliens until we became aliens ourselves. Yeah. It could happen. It could happen. So, we are joined today by three gentlemen from TUT, Tshwane University of Technology. And
say it loud, say it again, say it twice, say it three times fast.
TUT. For those of you who thought that it meant take your time, it's no, that's not what it means. It is the Tshwane University of Technology. And these guys are part of the solar car team, you know, and they put together basically a car that runs powered by the sun. Right? I think that's cool. So we're going to start from left to right. You gentlemen can introduce yourselves and let us know who you are.
The name is Nati.
Okay, Nati. That mic is considerably smaller than you. So there's no reason for you to be afraid of it.
Damn.
Please don't be afraid of it.
Definitely not afraid of it. The name is Nati Setuse. I'm the PR and logistical manager for the team Sun Chaser 2, the 2016 Sasol Solar Car Challenge.
Yeah, man.
My name is Johannes de Vries and I was the team manager for this team.
Thank you for joining us, Johannes.
And my name is Kyle Brand. Sorry, got a bit of flu. And I was the designer of the car body and eventually I became a navigator and driver.
Ah, wow. That's cool, man. There was a time when I was on TUT campus not too long ago. I think it was, when was it, Nati? Like 3 weeks?
That would have been 3 weeks back.
3 or 4 weeks back. And I saw this weird shaped car. It was, you hadn't put the branding on it just yet, but I mean, it was black. It was riding around. It's this one seater thing. And is that the car?
Okay. That was the car, yeah.
It looks so cool, by the way. As far as the design's concerned, shout out to Kyle.
Thanks. It was a team, not just me.
It really looks dope. Let's find out how it actually began. Like, how long have you guys been trying to put this car together? Is this a 2016 project?
No, I think the project is more about a couple of years ago. You don't just wake up one day and start a team. So in 2012, we had our first car. We didn't design the car. We did put it together and we were in the race. 2014, we designed and built our first car. And now in 2016, we built our first full carbon fiber monocoque car.
That's really cool, man. The amount of time it took for all of those things together, to put them together, I mean, that's what, 3 years? And that's pretty dope. That's pretty dope. Why the name Sun Chaser? I've always wondered, like, why Sun Chaser?
We had a couple of different ideas from the team, and eventually we ran out of time. We say, what is the best one? And we say, but listen, yeah, this car needs the sun. So we're chasing the sun all the way we go, and that's why I decided to go for Sun Chaser.
All right, man. That's it. Simple as that.
I wonder if you guys are party animals, because in the party scene, being a sun chaser is someone that's out the whole night
right,
and comes back the next morning. I wonder if you've lived, that life? That sun chasing life?
Well, at a certain part in our lives, I guess everyone, when you're at varsity, you experience that lifestyle. So yeah, we understand definitely what you're speaking about. But once you get to this level, sun chasing becomes a different element altogether, because you're working long hours, 24/7 from the day you decide, listen, we're going to have a team participating in the Sasol Solar Car Challenge. So once you decide on that, you now need to realize, listen, there's a lot of hours. It seems easy at first because you just say, I want to be part of the team. But once you get there, wow, it's amazing, challenging, and truly interesting.
Yeah, and then on the race, you basically, we're waking up at the time that I suppose a party would be ending.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to get there for the sun, because we want to be there as that sun gets up and catch the energy to charge up before we have to start driving.
Let's get into the race itself. Like, what needed to be put together? If you basically walk us through from the moment you decided to, you know, take part in the race itself.
Yeah, basically, you first need to apply, of course, that you want to participate, and then you need to submit a lot of documents. They want to know, do you have a proper design? Is your electrical system safe? And do you comply?
Yeah.
Because you do run on public roads, so they need to know, listen, is this car actually roadworthy, or is it going to fall apart somewhere along the race?
Yeah.
Then there's 2 days of scrutineering. One is your static scrutineering. They measure the car and make sure you comply with battery specifications and solar cells. You can't just put the cells that you want and the amount that you want. And then they want to see if your car is being handled properly on a racetrack. So you do brake test, you do handling test, and then you do a lap run on the racetrack so that they can determine what is the starting position for the race.
That's really cool. The race, where did the race start? Where's the finish line? That kind of vibe?
The race started at CSIR, and we finished in Cape Town at the waterfront.
So it's from basically Pretoria to Cape Town?
Yes. Via Port Elizabeth.
Port Elizabeth. Yeah. So it's like the long way around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Who drove the car down? Who was responsible?
So there were 4 of us. I was one of the drivers, and then we had Tian Sumeri, and then a guy we call Google.
Okay.
His real name is Jeremy, but we call him Google.
Okay. I'm guessing he's the brains of the group.
Well, he always has an answer.
Yeah, yeah. He's Mr. Know-it-all. All right, so how was it? Since you were actually in the car, how is the drive?
So, like, for the first hour, it's fun and it's cool. But then after, like, the next half an hour, your backside starts getting sore.
Yeah.
And then you're pushing to the two-hour limit. We are limited to 2 hours. But by the time you get close to 2 hours, you want to be out.
Like, yeah,
Your backside's sore and you're tired. But it is a lot of fun. It's like driving something that you haven't driven before, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But it's a little bit like driving a go-kart, but a lot more sophisticated. And, I mean, there's 100 things going on, and you've got to just pay attention. So, yeah, fun, but also intense.
That's pretty cool. This race couldn't have taken, like, a day and a half, clearly. This was what, 14 days of...
Well, so 8 days of racing.
Okay.
Yeah, 8 days, and we're limited. You don't... So the South African race is, well, it's not a race, it's a challenge. So you've got a dedicated, a defined start and end point each day.
Each day, yeah.
And then you've got loops. So the objective is to do as many kilometers as you can. So each day we would start and then look at our strategy, look at how much battery we had, and then decide how many loops we'd do, and then complete the sort of main drive as well. And then the winning team was the team who, by the end of the race, had racked up the most kilometers.
Yeah.
So arguably, you could just do like 100 loops and do a ton of kilometers. But obviously, you only have the sun, so you got to play that carefully.
It's like you remember when we were growing up, your mom was like, you better be inside the house before the street lights come on.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like one of those.
You made sure you were there. You would not miss, like, not even a second later, you'd be there.
So we had that, like, at 5:30 was the cutoff.
Yeah.
And after any minute later, they start penalizing you. So like, yeah, you get there by... I mean, the one day we had to... Our car, like, was running a bit low, so we had to put it on the trailer. And, I mean, I don't even know how. I still can't figure it out. But the car flew off the trailer into what's called Parc Fermé, which is the close for the day.
What keeps the team going? Because, obviously, you guys are responsible for different facets of this project. And then you bring it together. You come together and discuss, okay, this is what happened today in terms of this and that. But what keeps that sort of that team spirit? Because, I mean, it's everybody that's involved. So all of you have to keep each other motivated, I imagine.
Now, I think this is the choice to be part of a team is more like it's a passion. You want to do it. It's not like, maybe I'll join the team, because then you will see it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of extra hours. And eventually you will remove yourself from the team. So if you start working on this car for 3 months, day and night, every weekend, every public holiday, then it's like a family. So and then you know you need to do whatever it takes to get that car ready for the race and to get into Cape Town in time.
It sounds a lot like running a Formula One team. I mean, there's so much involved. And it's physical, it's mental, like it's training. It's a training experience.
Let's look, I am in no way intelligent enough to actually talk specifics about the car. But could you just shed some light into what actually goes into making a car like that? Like the components and stuff. Look, I'm going to sit here with a confused look on my face, but this is for our listeners that actually understand what the hell is going on.
So Johannes said earlier that it's a full composite, which means, well, we use carbon fiber. You can use other composites, but carbon fiber obviously makes the most sense. It's okay. The lightest for the strength that you get.
Yeah.
When we say a monocoque design, it's basically like a giant tub. So there's no sort of chassis or tubular internal structure which gives it its strength. The body gives it a strength.
Yeah.
So you have the body and then you're basically bolting on the suspension system, the wheels, the wing and the electrics all get bolted onto this body, which can sort of pull apart a little bit, but it's basically just a big shell. And that's mainly the mechanical and the physical side of it. I think Johannes can probably speak a bit more to the electrical side.
Yeah, for the electric, it's very important to take note of the regulations for that specific race. They define your maximum, they call it active cell area. So if you look at your sonar panel, only the black parts are the active area. So you need to motivate in your documentation that you do not exceed your 6 square meters surface area. The configuration on the car, it's up to you. Yeah. Then inside, of course, you need to take that energy and convert it and store it in the batteries for the rainy day or for your uphills. We designed our own battery pack, and it's not like a normal pack you buy off the shelf. You buy the components loose, and if I remember correctly, we have 396 cells in the car. It's all individual batteries, and you make up your own pack with serial and parallel connections. Mm-hmm. And then from there on, you have your motor controllers. And that drives your motors. And then we have a Wi-Fi unit in the car that gives us telemetry data. So in the support vehicle, we can monitor the motor temperatures, the speed of the car, the status of the batteries in terms of charge, how much energy is going in the batteries, how many energy out, and of course, what is the status of the battery.
So basically, to sort of give you an idea, like when you're driving, you have a guy in the car following you saying, hey, slow down,
okay,
or speed up, or like basically telling you, no man, the battery's dying, you got to calm down.
That has to be a very unique experience. Usually when I'm driving and someone behind me is a taxi driver telling me to get the hell out the way.
Well, on that note also, now I'd give you the aspect, Mills, probably, which becomes one of the most significant areas, which would be getting partners more than sponsors on board. And also that relationship which you need to have with those people, because at the end of the day, as Neil kindly elaborated earlier on, it's like the Formula One. If ever you work the Sasol Solar Car Challenge right, it actually gives you that kind of concept, because this is the platform where you're able to actually test out the grandest and the most newest improved technologies. You can utilize them in this particular race. You can actually test them out for your partners, and it gives you that platform to now minimize the research money, the research funds which they use to actually develop new products. If ever you've got such a strong team or such a strong relationship with your partners, it gives you that ability. And in turn, we also find if ever you've got a strong relationship with your partners or strong partners, you are now able, when we speak about free education earlier on, when we spoke about that, I kind of felt it tickling me inside to tell me, listen, this is actually one of the facets which we're looking at when we're looking at the Sasol Solar Car Challenge.
Yeah.
It's got so many aspects to it. It involves marketing, it involves communication, it involves engineering. Obviously, that's the biggest component of it. But there's so many spheres to it, you are able to breed your own crop for the future.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking for, and that's what our partners were giving us. When we come on board, we say now, listen, we've completed the Sasol Solar Car Challenge, 2016 Sasol Solar Car Challenge. Now already the team has been sitting down thinking already for 2018, what's going to happen? But now we obviously want to improve on each and every step. When we came in 2012, as Johannes elaborated earlier on, it was our first time being there. From there, when the team sat down in 2014, they said, listen, we want to improve on whatever we had done in 2012.
Yeah.
This time around, we actually went in with a solid goal. They had a certain number of kilometers which we wanted to complete. Those kilometers were met, and now the team has gone back and said, listen, we've met our target. What do we do now? So those are the interesting sides of it for your stakeholders, basically.
You guys are so driven. See what I did there? Kill myself.
But you can tell that Nati's the guy that sells the vision, yeah. Sells the pudding, I suppose, sells the desserts. But it's interesting that you should say that because we barely develop so much of our own things in this country and on this continent, that you guys can do research on another company's behalf to push their agenda, their mandate. You've got the skills, you've got the knowledge, and you've got the research. You've done it. So to be able to do that for a company coming in, I mean, man, I would just say take these millions, man. Just go flourish, you know?
The thing is like the car is one aspect, but there's like we've been talking again and again. There's 1,000 little things. Like we were talking, saying like it's good to know the weather. So, I mean, like a weather station on a support vehicle, I mean, that's got very little to do with the solar car other than the weather and the sun. But like, I mean, there can be a whole lot of research and development about monitoring weather for localized areas and all sorts. I mean, there's thousands of little projects and ideas and research opportunities that we would want to partner with to improve our whole team, not just the car, but like the whole running of the race.
You know, the challenge. You know, whenever people come together to try do something, there's going to be some obvious things that are going to happen. You're going to come across a couple of challenges. You're going to come across, you know, a couple of highlights. Let's start with the challenges. What were some of the difficult things that you guys had to, you know, overcome to get the project done?
So, yeah, so there were many. With the design, we got quite ambitious early on, and we had quite a unique shape that we were trying to pursue. And then in the progress, we saw that actually it didn't quite comply with the rules. There was a very like specific rule, and you could sort of interpret it one way or the other.
It had a gray area.
Well, it's gray, but only if you push.
Oh, okay.
And I think we were pushing a little hard, so then we had to alter the design sort of midway.
Yeah.
And I was actually in Cape Town during that time, so we had phone calls and email back and forth doing the alterations to the design, and I got back to a different shaped car. I mean, not too dramatically, but dramatic enough. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was a challenge, but actually we overcome it quite quickly and quite easily. And then obviously there's lots of little things, just like logistical, like, yeah.
But I think also in terms of part of the team, in the beginning you have a lot of interest from students. Our first meeting, I think we were more than 25 people in the room.
Yeah.
But as time goes by and you want them to commit, then you see them leaving silently.
Yeah.
But you need commitment. You need to know that you can trust someone. Say, listen, yeah, that's your responsibility. You need to fulfill that. Come whatever. That's your responsibility, make it work. And I think that's quite of the challenge, is to figure out which team member has got what it takes to be part of the team.
Yeah. And you know, especially when you, as a group, sometimes things get left by the wayside. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, did you remember to go pick up water? It's like, yeah, I'll do it in 5 minutes, you know? It's difficult getting people to work as a group like that. But we've just spoken about the challenges. Give me some of the highlights. I know there has to be tons.
So yeah, for me as a driver, like I drove the last sort of stretch into the CBD of Cape Town.
Was there a coin toss? This feels like it was a coin toss moment.
Well, basically, like myself and Tian were the two original drivers, and then we got two more a bit later. And we discussed it, and he had most of his family up here in Pretoria, so he agreed that he would want to start the race from the CSIR, and then most of my family are down in the Cape. So I asked, well,
all right,
can I finish?
That That's fair. That's
so it is fair. But so not a coin toss, but a negotiation.
All right.
And yeah, so that was sort of hair-raising and scary because it was windy, there's tons of traffic, and we had some interesting sort of, well, a very close accident, almost accident. A guy was sort of very interested in the car and videoing and not watching
where he was going.
Where he's going, and he almost wrote his bucky off and probably the car behind me. I was thankfully just missed it and oblivious because like my rear view system isn't a three mirrors, it's a little screen on the top, so I didn't see it. But apparently the road was splitting and he almost sort of didn't see the split and hit the cement curb and managed to thankfully regain control.
Yeah,
so I mean all of that was happening, and then but it was still spectacular driving into the waterfront, making the sort of cutoff time, because once again there was a cutoff time, and we we were close. I think we made it by 4 minutes. And if you think like 8 days, and we cut it into four minutes. So yeah, we were pushing it, and the wind and the traffic, and it was. But then also meeting my family there. So my wife and daughter, they flew down. And they were there at the finish, and yeah, it was.
That must have been epic.
Yeah, no, it was.
Sounds so
epic. Proper spectacular.
Yeah.
I think some of the other highlights is there wasn't a lot of time to test the car beforehand, so you don't know what to expect. Is it good or is it bad?
Mm.
And once you've done the first day and you see about this is our kilometers, these are the other teams, well, it's actually not too bad.
Yeah.
And for me, what was the nicest is we didn't have any problems with the car during the race. We saw other teams breaks down, have to pull off, has to weld, whatever, and then our car just keep going. And for me, that was a great achievement.
It kept together from Pretoria all the way to Cape Town. That is fantastic.
And I think one or two other small details, like the one day we stopped next to the road to charge, and out of nowhere we had like a group of kids who just were super excited and like checking out this car.
Yeah.
And then we had like chatting to them, and then actually we sort of gave them some sweets and stuff. And then we actually, they encouraged them to sort of pick up litter next to the road. And I mean, in the end, we won the environmental award, and we think that that was a nice contribution to it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Those kind of highlights of like just people showing like fascinated and actually sort of catching a glimpse of a potential future where we're not relying on fossil fuels and things, where like actually this actually looks a lot more viable than people even realize.
You know, I mean, I guess my highlight, excuse me for stealing your shine a little bit, but I saw the car on campus and I had no idea what the hell it was. And when I finally heard what it was, I was like, I actually spoke to Natia. I was like, look, dude, we're going to have to bring you guys into studio so we can talk about this. Because looking at it, I mean, we'll post a picture on Instagram. Follow me at Jack_5'4" and I'll, you know, post it a little bit later. But I mean, the look of the car itself, it's something from 2035 or something. It looks so, so cool, man. It's unbelievable. Natty, you are going to say a few things?
Well, most definitely. It is a beautiful design. So to the team, big ups, a whole lot to them.
Man.
Then on the other hand, for me, the most interesting part or one thing which really gave me the hope to go into the race with a good start was the fact that we were the first team to totally pass scrutineering. Mm.
Yeah.
So that in itself just told me, listen, this is a different breed of the team and we're really going to go the distance. And for me, from there on, it was an interesting step-by-step phase right up until the end. A lot of challenges, but believe me, you sleeping on a stretcher in a small tent, back for the first 2 days, oh Lord, it's another situation altogether, camping. But when you get to the end, you really realize, listen, this was worth it because you know what has really gone into actually getting to where you are. And the team, you can actually see how elated they are when they get to the end. Jumping into the pool of water there at the V&A waterfront, you could tell that the team really achieved something, and our dean for the Faculty of Engineering actually flew down to meet us there. And you could tell he was really ecstatic about what we had accomplished. So that, for me, put together the whole trip and made me feel, you know what, definitely come 2018, I need to be part of the next team and I need to find more improvements and ways to ensure that this team does better than what it did this year.
That's really cool, man. That is really cool. I heard Kyle mention an award somewhere there. He just snuck it in there. He was like, you know, they gave us this extra award, you know. Let's talk about the awards. What did you guys receive other than the environmental award, I believe?
So, yeah, I'm trying to think.
So many. Where do we start?
Collaboration of the year. You know.
Invention of the year.
No. You know what? On this year's one, there were a bit of a limited structure in terms of awards, as they are currently actually expanding the Sasol Solar Car Challenge.
Okay.
But the things which we had actually won were mostly on our personal goals. That's where I think we really achieved a lot. So we went in with set goals. When we achieved them, we felt we had won a lot and we knew where we stood. Especially if ever you look at it like this. In 2012, when I was looking at the stats from Sasol, these guys, they tell us, in comparison to the international teams, we had a huge margin. Within the top five, your top 10 regions, it was always or mostly your international teams.
Yeah.
But now they're saying if you compare the two, our local teams are really growing in leaps and bounds, and they are getting to a place whereby they're actually competing with the international teams.
Yeah.
And you need to look at it and understand that some of these international teams, like TUT for one, we were working with the budget in our class. We were the least funded team. And yet we managed to, out of 14 registered teams, we positioned number 6 internationally and number 2 in South Africa.
That is deep.
Now, with all of that said and done, you need to understand that these international teams, the most funded team came in with roughly, this is not an exact figure, 100 million.
Wow.
Now, you're competing against teams which are looking for 2 million, going to 3. These people are coming in with that type of funding.
Yeah.
So that's why we go down and sit down and say, listen, we really, really need our huge conglomerates to come on board and to actually interact and try and see where can they fit in this sphere of the Sasol Solar Car Challenge.
I think it's really interesting when you consider the fact that it's Sasol that put together this competition type thing. I don't know. I am I the only person who sees the irony in this?
No. I guess then you can look at it like this. All these fuel companies have come to a point whereby they're realizing that at one point or another, using fossil fuels is going to come to an end.
Yeah.
There's new ingenuity coming into play. So now what do you do? Big conglomerates will forever be on the side of winning because they always ensure that wherever there's money to be made or wherever there's progress to be made, they are on that side. So it's no coincidence that Sasol is actually on the other end of this. They're the ones creating the platform for us to get your renewable energy vehicle.
That is really cool.
And they're not doing it independently, if you could say, because we've got people like TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency. They have come on board in a very big way, and they are still also looking to grow their support and the way they get involved in this particular program. So you'd say the government is actually realizing what it's worth, and they're wanting to put in more towards this. And it encourages our students to say, listen, there is actually room for growth within our country. You say there's no jobs, create your own jobs.
That is really cool, man. I know this might be somewhat of a difficult question to answer, but how far are we from, you know, sustainable, renewable energy being used, for cars? Like, is that day going to be coming anytime soon whereby you can buy a car and just drive with the sun?
So I was telling Johannes during the race that when I was in primary school, I was convinced that by the time I was 18 and driving a car, it wouldn't be a petrol car.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. But yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's more than just about driving on the sun. This whole challenge and coming back to Sasol as a sponsor is they driving innovation.
Yeah.
So even it is maybe it seems ironic that they support fuel and now they support the electrical drive. You create engineers. You create actually optimization in every level. You create engineering students and engineers that you can employ one day.
Yeah.
Now that's what the Solar Challenge is about. Is you optimize every aspect of the car, and now industry can use that. Because they don't always have the funding and the time to optimize every component. We as students can do that.
Yeah.
And they use that technology to put into electrical vehicles.
That is really cool.
And I think that is the whole drive for the Solar Challenge. So eventually, yes, if you can optimize your electrical drive, your electrical usage, your battery capacity, you might be able to short distances run solar only. If you compare the top teams, they manage 700 kilometers a day solar power only. You see, so it's becoming a possibility.
Slowly but surely, yes. Plus, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who drives 700 kilometers per day in a petrol car. You know what I mean?
Well, you got to fill up about twice.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. That is pretty hectic.
In terms of other innovations, we've got the solar-powered car now. Are we looking into diverting into something different from the cars?
As a team or as a university? There's lots of small innovations that are sort of associated with the car. And I think as a solar car team, we obviously are mostly focused on the car and getting the next car and the new innovations related to it. But as a sort of faculty and as an engineering faculty at the university, I mean, there's thousands of little projects and innovations here and there.
Yeah, I think if you just look at the manufacturing process of making a carbon car, there are conventional ways and there are faster, low cost, not as perfect, but close to perfect. And these are the avenues that we explore and try to perfect even more. So, and I think that's, and even if it's about body design or having an easier way to remove your tires from the car or whatever it may be, you try to optimize and simplify every aspect of the car, and that's what engineering about.
And I think like this car that we've just done, I mean, a good chunk of the sort of non-essential or non-structural parts were 3D printed. It's sort of like, I remember one late night we were busy working and we're like, oh, we need that part. Okay, let me go print.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was like, that was partly the norm in the process of building the car. It's like, no, let's just print it. And like, I mean, that technology wasn't around a couple of years. Well, it's been around a while, but like, it wasn't prevalent.
Yeah.
And I mean, even within that, there's all sorts of experiments we want to try to do where we will print a sort of an internal sort of mold and put carbon over it and then dissolve out the insides and all sorts of cool things I get. So, I mean, all of those things, we're pushing all the little bits of technology that we touch with the car project.
Now, coming from an institution that struggles for good news, you know, for struggles to be seen as one of the best institutions in the country, what does a project like this do not only for the institution, but for your students as well? Because, you know, if you look up to UT, you won't find a lot of sun chasers in there, which are there but don't get talked about enough.
Well, on that one, Neo, you really hit it hard, and it's something which a lot of people always ask and have got a concern about. On the road, I'll just give you a small scenario. On the road, we were hosting a lot of activations, educational activations for students. With Johannes, he runs multiple projects from the institution, which actually are what you call interactions with the community. So what would happen, they would ask you, listen, I see you've got such and such a program, it's so exciting, what a good initiative, but I've got a problem, you guys are always on the news for strikes, this and the other. I think this on in itself, the way we have actually come around and changed this to say, listen, when we're doing the 2016 Sasol Solar Car Challenge, we need to ensure that our team and our institution is put on the map and people really know what it's about. Because with this, it has proven it with no reasonable doubt that TUT is one of the best engineering faculties in the country, period. Whether you like it or not, we are there and we are occupying that space. Those who have been in the forefront in the past are now realizing, listen, this institution has got what it takes and they are doing it beyond reasonable doubt and they are still going for gold because we can't sit back. I think we create the environment where students feel as if the only progressive thing to do is be involved in your strikes, your drinking and all of that. So when you actually create an environment where students are feeling, listen, there's a lot more going on within my institution than just having me sitting at res and being idle. Because at the end of the day, idle minds always come up with the most insane and unprogressive things.
Yeah.
So that's what we're about. And I think this is what's going to actually open up doors and people are going to have that interest of find out what else do we have in TUT. And I can tell you now, we've got a lot of initiatives and a lot of programs we're running.
A lot of my friends don't think I have a real job.
Because what? Well, a lot of our friends don't think we have real jobs either. So
but it's like, no, like sort of I'll hang out and I'll be like, yeah, I'm building a solar car. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, oh, we're busy helping some guys, so Giannis and them, like print a humanoid robot. And then like, no, we're designing an artificial nest for ground hornbills. And like, there's just tons of cool stuff going down. Like, I think during the solar car project, more or less by accident and doing a favor for a favor to get stuff done, we ended up 3D printing a mold for a prosthetic foot for a 2-year-old little girl.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, like, and that, but that was a somewhat spontaneous sort of accidental collaboration.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so much cool stuff going down. Like, we just, I don't know, I have fun.
Cool. I mean, at this point in time, if there's anyone out there that wants to go into the field of engineering and they had doubts or whatever, I think you've just removed all of those doubts, man. Like, I wish I studied engineering, man. I mean, you guys are essentially pushing the envelope on so many different things. I mean, I would have never thought you could, you know, print a prosthetic leg and all of this stuff. I mean, the boundaries are non-existent at this point in time. You guys are pushing the envelope all the time. The car looks absolutely cool. You moved it from Pretoria all the way to Cape Town without a single breakdown. It seems as if I'm sitting in the studio with a bunch of supermen, you know, who don't have kryptonite, seemingly.
You know?
You guys keep talking about the future, keep talking about 2018. And Johannes, you've been saying a lot. You've been saying this word a lot. We are students. Is being part of this a lot of learning, like a lot of constant learning and adapting and changing your methods?
Yes, I think that is, but that is what engineering is about. You have a problem and you need to find a solution. There's no textbook solution. And I think that is what we want to give our students is, listen, yeah, there's the problem. I want 6 solutions and then we handpick the first 2 that we can try and then we can solve it. There's no way, no, it's easy to do, we do it this way. No, that's definitely not the best way. Find us more ways and then we can see what is really the best way. And students do like challenges. You give them a challenge, they will work on it. And it's the same like school kids. I mean, you give them something that they like and something they wonder about and they will really try to make it work. And it's one thing to publish a paper and to do a simulation that we've done before. But make it work in real life.
Yeah.
Then you actually see, you get a reality check and say, whoa, it seems nice in software, but it must be a glitch because it's not working in real life. We had to tweak a few things.
In terms of engineering, in terms of innovation in the country and personally, I suppose, what excites you? What have you seen that you think is going to sort of change the landscape of engineering?
Yeah, so I'm actually sort of what is called an industrial designer.
Okay.
And which is, I mean, we are a unique breed in the sense that no one actually knows what we do, I think. I don't know. These guys are going to disagree or agree. But so at TUT, we fall under engineering and we kind of like that space because we get to collaborate on projects like the solar car. In other institutions, they fall under arts or somewhere else because it could be furniture design or anything like that. It's sort of a mixture. But within that space, within the space of sort of design and design interfacing with engineering and all of that, to me, there's tons of spectacular opportunities around sort of communication, optimizing systems. So I'm having lots of fun working with the electrical guys because they can understand sort of big picture systems. So when you design a car and a cruise control in a car, you don't have to just make it, oh, I want to go this speed, done. No, that car can figure out 1,000 things, taking in multiple inputs to work out, well, actually, if you go at this speed, it's better. And and you can use things like weather, traffic, whatever. And all of those kind of ideas and those sort of bizarre thinking, that excites me most. And also, we're continually pushing the envelope of technology, software, everything. I mean, I think, yeah, I play with software. Like I think I have... You know, my desk is always about 4 computers on and I am perpetually installing and experimenting with new software. And the reason I do it is I want to learn it because if I learn it, I can teach it to students and to pass it on. But I can also say, okay, what are these guys doing? Oh, that's interesting. And maybe it's in a completely bizarre domain that doesn't actually fit within engineering, but you can transpose it and use it for innovation.
I think what is very important as well is students need to see there's a certain path that we teach students and there's a certain basic concept of engineering and what you do as an engineering job. But that's not where it ends. It ends where your imagination ends. So if you say, but listen here, maybe can't we do that? Let's sit down around the table and see how far can we push that dream and make it work in the space that we have. And you will actually be amazed to see that we can do actually a lot more and you as a student can do a lot more than what you thought was possible. If you look at all the previous students who were on the previous solar car teams and also in the budget teams, not one of them struggled to find employment.
Yeah.
Because these industries, they know, listen here, these oaks, they know what they're doing. They make something work and that's what you want. The attitude is right and they've got the skills and they get employment.
I would love to see Kyle's living space, not even workspace, but where you live. What a mess. What an interesting, adventurous mess that must be.
So you joke and you mention the word mess. On the team, they always laugh because I perpetually am losing everything. And in our office, my desk is absolute chaos. And generally where I'm occupied for a little while is chaos. But it's because I'm sort of trying to interface with 1,000 things at once. And I enjoy it. It exhausts me. It exhausts those around me because, like, every day I have something cool that I want to experiment with. But it's yeah, to me, that's a sort of a passion of, well, that's like, I just like doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
And like, you just do cool stuff and then hopefully you change the world doing it.
Yeah, well, I think you're on the fast track to doing that, man. This is just genius.
Let's break some shit and change the world.
Yeah, why not?
Accidentally so sometimes.
You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet, man. That's just facts.
We're talking about the Sun Chaser 2. What happened to the one?
No, one is still there in the lab.
Okay.
We've utilized a lot of the components from one, and it was part of our whole funding and design strategy. So when we designed one, we had a very limited budget. And we said, okay, what is the most crucial part of a solar car that can be reused? And we decided to go for top-notch motors and controllers for one, but we did not have the budget and the funding to go and buy the best batteries and the best solar panels.
Yeah.
And we realized, okay, solar panels, especially these ones on the car, they're very fragile and they might not last more than one season. So we reused the motors and the controllers, and now we had budget to improve the batteries and the solar panels on two. But it's a pity to see solar cars not being used. So our desire is really to see, but can't we utilize one and get another university or another school involved and say, let us help you, let's optimize one again with some additional funding and get your guys in the race so that you can have that same learning experience.
That's really cool. That is really cool, man. Look, man, unfortunately, like, we have run out of time. I'm stuck. Like, I'm stuttering and stuff because my mind has just been filled with so many cool things. Like, right now, I feel like being a radio personality isn't enough. But thank you guys so much for coming through. Just final words, if you have
any. You guys
any.
Must come with in the next race and give us commentary the whole way down.
That would be cool. Yeah. I'm okay, we are there already. Where's the starting line? Let's go to the starting line now.
It's a proper, you can run parties in the evenings and comment on the race during the day.
You see what I'm saying? We need people like Kyle in this planet.
Exactly.
Like, seriously. Oh, man. So how do we keep up with you guys on social media platforms? Natty, this is you. This is you, yeah.
All right. No, I've already prepared that for that one. Well, on Facebook, you can catch us at TUT Solar Car.
Okay.
On Instagram, at TUT Solar Team. Twitter, TUT Solar Team 1.
Yeah.
And also, for further information, and also if ever you'd like to communicate with us with regards to our plans for the future, you can email me directly at setusennn@tut.ac.za.
All right. That. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that, guys. I can't thank you enough for coming through. It's really been interesting, man. It's been a full hour of nothing but, you know, eye-opening, you know, innovative thinking. And kudos to you guys. Well done on a fantastic job. I'm just glad everything went according to plan and you guys, you know, crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, man. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
for
much
having
for
us.
Having us, man.
Ah, man. So, Neo, Londi,
yes.
What are we doing with our lives now? Should we be signing up to be engineers one day? Like, what's happening? Okay, just so you know, no one can hear you scratching your heads. Okay? This is radio.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Remember, man, since these people don't have an answer, for those people who want to get into contact with these guys, remember on Instagram, it's at TUT Solar Team. On Twitter, it's at TUT Solar Team 1. And to contact Natty, all you have to do is email him on setusenn@tut.ac.za. TUT is not a bad school, people. Okay.
Not even.
Myself and Neil come from there. So don't mess around. Don't screw around, man. But it was dope. For those of you that want to be a part of the conversation on Twitter, please follow us at JNG_live. And we'll keep the conversation going. Keep, you know, with the hashtag 20-something. It's been dope. And just like that, we are out of here, man.
We out.
We are done. We're finished. Don't cry, Londi.
No, not even. CliffCentral.com.